Let me stop there and see if there are any questions about this topic. No questions? Perfectly understood? Perfectly implemented? It's a matter of putting it into practice, that's right. Yes. So many. Yeah. You think of particularly the people coming from Europe, coming to this country. They had to pick themselves up from where they were living and move to this continent. That was quite a huge endeavor to do. So you think of the activity. Then once they arrived here, there's no fast food stores. There's no housing that's built for them. They have to create all of that from the materials that they find. They had to clear land and become farmers or be able to raise their own food and so on. And so the tremendous sense of activity and also the promise that you can become and do anything that you want here. You know, this is the land of promise. And the old rules were out the door. And here you are able to achieve that. So this promise of productivity, this promise of prosperity was there. And it just made for incessant activity. So the society is so filled with that. Everybody always in cars, going places now. The need for having music on all the time or some kind of noise on all the time. Just as that, it's that rajasic kind of stimulation that's always in activity there. So not only do we have it as individuals, but we have it collectively as well. Well, when you're in that kind of, you know, environment, and you have that with you, there's just a certain amount of it just running through you all the time. So then you're asked to meditate. Okay, I'm going to sit. Not have any thoughts. Well, how far does that go? Bang, 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 bang. It just keeps running through you because we're just so acclimated to it. We haven't been taught how to calm the mind, how to clear the mind. It's not even been held out as something to do for most of our lives. And so now you're supposed to calm the mind. Well, it's just running all the time. In fact, we're even afraid to let it come and wind down and get calm and get still. Why are we afraid? We don't know what will happen. Maybe we'll disappear. Maybe there won't be anything left. Maybe we'll be an empty suit. And then where will we be? See? So that's the fear. It grabs hold of us and we get quiet. And I remember times of meditating and I would drop down to a new level and I was aware of it. And all of a sudden, I'd pop right back up. And I would just want to get up and move. I just want to get up and start getting active. Because I had hit something a little quieter, a little more still. And something inside of me reacted to that. So it takes practice. It takes training in order to be able to work down through all these different layers. And if we don't take the time, if we don't make the effort, of course, we're not going to get the results. But to really dedicate ourselves, okay, and that's why we establish a pattern for ourselves. That's why we establish a habit. Now, it's just not putting in our time. We have to be working at it. We have to be looking at those places where we pop back up very quickly and say, aha, okay, that's my challenging area. I'm going to press that. I'm going to push on that. I'm going to work with that. There's that fear. There's that anxiety. And many times, spiritual aspirants will have more fear and more anxiety than somebody who's not practicing. Why? Because we're working down through the different layers, and we're challenging those places. Other people who live up in their comfort zone, and perhaps they're numbing it with alcohol or other kinds of things. are just music and activity, and they're just always on the run. What they're doing is they're numbing themselves to these deeper kinds of feelings. We're actually moving right into them and then beyond them. So we're challenging them. So there are people who are aspirants, and I had a time when I got more and more and more anxious. And I thought, I'm not only not making progress, I'm going backwards. And what I realized after a time is that wasn't true, because whenever I was about ready to enter into a much deeper, much broader sense of consciousness, the resistive forces would get stronger. The anxiety, the fear, the desire nature would all rear their heads up. And if I hadn't kept at it, if I hadn't kept working at it, you see, if I had popped up and said, well, I guess I'm not very good at this, and I'm just going to go off and live in the world because I'm not very good at all this, I would have stayed exactly where I was. So we have to have that determination. We have to have that dedication. Nobody can have it for us. And so we work with it, we move through it, we go deeper and deeper and deeper until we break those bonds that keep us enclosed in a tiny little world. And we go beyond that and we step out into a much, much larger world. And we gain freedom. We gain freedom. And to imagine having a life without fear. Can you imagine such a thing? No fear. No fear. And what would that be like? And how would living that life be? Yeah. And your life guided by wisdom. You see, fear is there because it tries to keep you out of trouble, because that's your instinctive mind that's trying to guide you and keep you out of trouble. But it's you might say it's a negative guidance, because it's what to avoid. It's pushing you against, and it can hem you in to where you're living in a tiny little cave of a space. You're so hemmed in by the fears, and so you work down through them. You keep working through them. You breathe through them. You keep using the Hong Sa, you keep working your way through them until you've moved through them, and then you're free from them. And how long does it take? It takes as long as it takes. We don't know our whole history. We don't know how deeply these things have been embedded into us. And so we don't know how long it takes, but what we know is that there's no progress made without doing the work. So we dedicate ourselves to doing the work. And when we do, then we enter into that calm state of mind. It's easy to get distracted, isn't it? See? If we wanted God that much, we'd have him. I demand.
If you know you're in that distracted mode,
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to get there, do you just keep like trying and trying and trying, or is there a point? Because I think at other times, like doing Kriya, you've talked about, you know, try to do the best breath you can.
Right.
And don't just sit there. If it's not a good one, you know, if it's not a good one, you know, don't just sit there forever trying to redo it and redo it. To just
no.
do your best and then know that you've done your best, and then
right.
it's okay to get up. And could you give any more guidance around
well,
when you need to hang in there versus when?
There's two tendencies of the mind with an idea. One, an uncomfortable idea. And one is to repress it. Oh, I don't want to think about that. I'm going to distract myself, or I'm going to try to push that away. That's not what I should be thinking about. I'm going to push it away. Well, good luck. You know, it finds the cracks and it comes back up anyway. The other is for it to get onto a merry-go-round, and it just goes around and around and around. We've all had that, a certain thought that just gets under that merry-go-round and never quits. And there is a third alternative, and that is to give it an avenue for it to leave by. And by that I mean, through with the thought in particular, through the ajna, see, picture or feel a flame of light in front of you. And that thought flows out and goes into the flame, and see the flame consuming it and taking it away. And that way you're giving it some place to go, and then the light becomes a purifying agent. And you can do that with a thought, you can do it with a feeling. If you're feeling anxious or afraid or a desire, if you have a big desire nature come up, and you just end the flame. And it doesn't have to go through the ajna. If it's a pain in the heart, it can go from the heart straight into the flame. And so by giving it an avenue to go to, you're not repressing it, and you're getting off of the merry-go-round of just going around and around, or the dog race, you know, just going around and following the little bunny going around in it, and it gets you nowhere at all. And so when you do that, as you imagine doing that with, say, some repetitive thought, you see it going into that flame, and you see the flame taking it and purifying it and burning it and taking away. What do you imagine being the result of that? Okay.
There isn't a lot of, like, a revolving. It's the,
so it's a constant.
The day planner mentality of.
Right. So it's a constant flow. That's fine. Then be like the individual who stands on the bank of the river, watching the river go by. Watch the thoughts flow by. Be aware and conscious that you're breathing. Don't try to interfere with them. Just let them stream right on by. So let's take that, and then just imagine that you're having one of those moments, and then you just see it going by, and you're on the banks of the river watching it flow by, watching it flow by. And what do you experience as you see that in your mind's eye?
A lot of calm.
Yeah.
And being ready to.
Yeah.
It's not mind to try to channel. It's just
move. Passing through. You're not trying to block it. You're not diving into the river and identifying with it. You're just watching it move right through. That will eventually, as you access the calm mind, that stream will eventually dry up. And then you'll just have the calmness. It's a wonderful technique that God gave me. That it's very effective. Other thoughts or questions?
The thought came to me of creation and the activity,
mm-hmm.
and how the core of the atom is just God's energy or energy,
mm-hmm.
and that it's only the activation, only the activity, the movement that turns it into manifestation.
Right.
Natural thing that we would want to do that. I mean,
yeah.
We want to get to God's energy. We want to get to that pureness, but that's the way we're built, is to
be active. Mm-hmm.
Even at that infinitesimal.
Right.
Level.
It's very, very part of our nature. But what is equally true, and actually more true, is that the stillness is also part of our nature. And this is, for most of us, that represents a duality. Well, am I in stillness or am I in activity? But Krishna talks about actionless action. Actionless action. And by that, he means you are in the stillness. You feel a great sense of stillness in you, and you are in activity at the same time. Now, when the material mind tries to make sense of that, it doesn't necessarily make sense because, well, I'm either in stillness or I'm in activity. But the realization brings with it that capacity. And so a part of you is inwardly calm, inwardly still, and you're standing on the banks of the river, and the river is flowing. The thoughts are flowing, life energy is flowing, feelings are flowing. And there's a part of you who stands separate and apart, who watches the whole thing, observes the whole thing. Actionless action. Actionless activity. It is a beautiful state of mind to be in. The one thing I noticed with Mother, Mother was a powerful personality. She had a powerful mind. She felt things deeply. I never saw her off balance. I saw her feel things deeply, state things deeply, think on things deeply, but I never saw her off balance. There was a part of her that was always watching, always aware that this was God acting through her. She's a wonderful example. Does anybody feel that they don't deserve material prosperity, that a spiritual person shouldn't have material prosperity?
Yeah,
you need the cat of nine out and throw a little ash on your food so it doesn't taste too good. And ruin you. Right. 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 Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a very common kind of a theme. And so one way to approach that is to see and feel when you put your mind on God and you put God first. You say, okay, God, is this a right desire for me to have? Does it harm anybody? You can use kind of common means of evaluation. Does this harm somebody? Does it harm me? Okay, it doesn't do either one of those. All right, so it's just the right thing for me. And inside you feel, yeah, this is a good thing. It adds beauty to my life or goodness or some utility. In some way, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. So you can do that through reasoning and through intuition. Once you establish that, and you have that sense of calmness about it, then you feel as if that is God who is creating through you. This is God's voice speaking to you. This is God moving through you and creating through you. And now it's not yours. There's no sense of ownership in there. This is a divine creative act that's occurring through you. And for you to close yourself off to that is to close yourself off to the divine presence. So then as you imagine opening yourself wide for that good to come to you and be expressed through you, and that it will be for the highest good of everybody concerned. What do you sense in yourself as you open yourself in that way and connect it with that idea? It can be either. Just your general sense of openness and magnetic attractiveness to your good coming to you. Right. Does it make you feel less spiritual? Okay. Okay. Right. And that would be a measuring stick in there. Something begins to take you. We've all experienced the wants. I want that, you know, and we can feel it as a kind of graspiness, a kind of I want that, I want to get that. And it begins to take us over, and it's an uncomfortable feeling. That's not being imbued with God consciousness. That's desire nature, pure, raw desire nature. And that's what takes us away from the divine nature. So the moment we connect that desire, this is God working through me, this is God operating, desiring through me, and we have a sense of calm, a sense of goodness about it, then we can open ourselves wide to that and feel that there's no limit to it, which may be a little bit of a stretch at first, and we can work on gradually opening up. But eventually, there's no limit to it. An entire ocean can flow through easily when I'm in that divine consciousness. See, one thing is, many of us, when we come up against a challenge, we instinctively shrink. We contract. Oh, that's hard. Oh, I don't know if I can do that. What if I do it wrong? What if I mess up? And we shrink, we contract. To cultivate the opposite, I grow, I open, I draw more from the divine source from behind me to meet whatever challenges are coming. And you can sense the difference inside of you. One is the problem looms large and I get tiny. The other is, oh, there's the problem and I grow in magnitude in order to meet the problem. I draw more. I open myself more to this dynamic charge from behind me. And what a difference that makes. That's prosperity. Mental, energetic, spiritual prosperity that draws all of our good to us. Isn't that wonderful? Good way to live life. But it's so common for us to instinctively contract, you see. So we have to cultivate a new habit. We grow into a problem instead of contract when it comes. Ah, there's a challenge. How can I open myself, grow into that problem, expand myself? How can I bring in others to help me meet? I'm not going to hide, ashamed. Oh, I've got this problem. No, I want to expand into it. I want to grow into it. Totally different feeling for it. See how the subject touches on so many different aspects of our life.
And one of the things that she realized at that point, it was, you know, we'd never be able to feed this many people. And just all these different things that she's been part of women's empowerment in different groups through the world. And she said, the thing that has come to me is it's impossible to know what's possible.
Right. There are books written in the 70s that when we got to be 3 billion people on the earth, there'd be massive starvation, there'd be wars, there'd be all kinds of calamities. Well, we're at 6 billion. And there's actually enough food to feed everybody. It's political and other kinds of problems, the way people starve in the way that they do, which is terrible and something to solve. But it's not because of a lack of food. We continue to pay farmers not to grow food. So there's plenty of food to feed the people that are here. And it was a really fundamental, and this thinking was so embedded in me. And Mother, you know, through her teachings, gradually weaned me away from it. But there's only so much, and we've only got so much, and we're going to run out, and we need to start rationing, and we need to start paring down. She said that's the wrong approach. We need to expand. We need to grow. We need to grow our way into the problem, not shrink our way into the problem. Because when you shrink your way into the problem, you become less. And that's not how God has designed us. Now, it doesn't mean that we go out and willy-nilly, you know, treat resources in a wasteful kind of a manner, but to grow into the problem. We have energy problems right now in terms of petroleum and that kind of thing. How can we grow into the problem? How can we creatively meet this problem? Not just by rationing gas, but by creating new energy sources. There's incredible energy throughout this universe that has not been tapped into at this point. And how can we grow our way into that problem? Find clean energy, pure energy, cheap energy, so that prosperity can grow and open up. And it's such a tendency to contract and see, oh, we need to become less, instead of, no, we need to become more. We don't need to become little, we need to become big. But you can see what the tendency is. Oh, I need to shrink. And it took me a long time to get that message from Mother. Eventually it started to sink in. But I remember there was a governor of California, Jerry Brown, and he ran on, we need to get used to doing less and being less, and we've achieved this, and now we're going to go down here. And it's a very appealing idea to many people. Absolutely deadly spiritually. Because It's not just simplifying your life. It's a demand that you have to become something less. If you choose to simplify your life, then you're gaining a different kind of freedom. But when you feel constricted, then you begin to shrink and get smaller. It's an understandable idea, but a wrong-headed idea. And that's part of your prosperity. That's your openness to prosperity, individually and collectively. How do we grow our way into this problem?
So then that's part of the problem, is that when you feel there's just this much, then there gets that competition, I have to get, if you don't, or you have to have, no, I won't.
Right. And if I have more, you know, if I have a full plate, that means there's starving children in India. Well, how does that work exactly? You know, it doesn't. You know, and again, we shouldn't be wasteful with it, but it's an expanding pie. And the people who thought that there just wouldn't be enough people or enough food for 3 billion people, they were just dead wrong. They are wrong. And so to feel that whatever our problems are, we can grow our way into that problem. We can expand our way into that problem. We can become creatively new to meet those challenges and those needs.
That's something I'm really working on. It's nice to hear that tonight, because it's like, okay, I'm unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, it feels so right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to school, but it just feels more expansive than when I was working and making a whole lot more money.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so, but I'm trying to find ways to implement that, and it's almost like other people are starting to get in, like you said, to grow, and I really want to work on that and not get afraid of it. Just always
right.
Hide from people.
Right.
So.
So that's part of it, is you grow and you open yourself and see people as resources. See them as helpers in your life. See them as, and you the same with them. It's a synergistic thing that, it begins to build with each other, and so you look for that. You open yourself to it. You embrace it. And yes, absolutely, feel that you are in a field of abundance. And it's flowing to you now. It's coming in larger and larger measure. And your part is to be attentive, is to look. I've talked about the study before, but I just think it's so fascinating where they took these college students and they said, they asked them a question, are you lucky? How would you say, are you lucky?
Sometimes,
okay. So they took half the students and who said they were lucky, and another half who said, no, you know, nothing ever comes my way, I'm not lucky. So then they had these magazines, and embedded within the magazines, it was printed up, so it all looked like it was a continuous whole, but there was these advertisements, and these advertisements would say, take this magazine up to the facility. They were told to sit down and look at this magazine and read through it. Take this magazine up to the facilitator, collect $25 and leave. Okay, the people who identified themselves as lucky, oh, that's great. They got up, they handed in the magazine, got their $25 and left. The people who said they were unlucky just skipped right on by it. And there's several of them embedded in this magazine all the way through. And they just keep on leaping. Okay, what would you like me to do now? Well, here's another magazine. Look through it. It had it too. You know, they just keep looking through. They wouldn't see it. They'd say, oh, that's not for me. That's for someone. Their mind would skip right over it.
Or you don't want to be a fool to ask for it because then, you know, look stupid.
Right, because you're unlucky. Couldn't possibly apply to you. And so when you start looking for these occurrences coming into your life, oh, there is a little gift that just came to me. Isn't that lovely? Now, instead of thinking, well, yeah, you know, I just found a dollar bill, but I need $100, you know, so what's good is that to me? No, I just found a dollar bill. Oh, that's pretty cool. It's coming my way. It's coming my way. Everything that comes to you is coming your way. You constantly affirm that. What that does is it opens the door up more. It attunes the mind to seeing the possibilities, to see the opportunity. Oh, that could be for me. Doesn't mean everything is, but you begin to see it. That could be for me. Sure, why not? You can go to school and unemployment. Oh, really? That could be for me. Somebody else might say, oh, you know, I can't go to school, or I can't afford that, or I'm not smart enough to go to school. You know, just a thousand reasons not to. You say, oh, that could be for me. So that, you can almost sense how that increases the magnetism, how that begins to feel, oh, I am lucky. You know, I've got a wealthy father. He's in heaven, and, you know, but I've got this incredible resource. And it's drawing my good to me. And how lovely if everyone in this room, from this moment onward, opened themselves completely and totally to all the prosperity. Everything that is meant for you. Mother used to tell this story of somebody going up to heaven, seeing St. Peter at the gate. And huge warehouse filled with gifts, and all the gifts had names on them. He says, what's this? Why aren't they distributed? He says, they're meant for people on earth, but they won't receive them. See? And we go, no, no. And God wants that because He actually adds to the prosperity of the world through us. So when you deny that prosperity in yourself, you're denying that flow of how God wishes to give to this world. Creative ideas, loving feelings, life energy that allows you to serve in this world. So many different ways. Allow yourself to be that conduit. And watch this world grow. Watch it prosper. You know, America had that motto, huh? Can-do attitude. You know, look at what it's created. Now, it needs balance. It has tremendous material prosperity, but it needs spiritual balance. needs a ballast of the spirituality, the deepening spirituality. It's the part we need, that can-do attitude with that. The same spunk, the same will, the same desire to get the spiritual and get that into balance.